23. The Honor of Angels. And at the last, they cannot hold them. The long martial feud that has existed between their legions, between angels of darkness and guardians of death, between the great war captains Corswain and Typhus, seems pitiful and meaningless, merely the blunted games of the lists or the dainty sport of the tawny ground. It feels preposterous, a cheap and empty jest, that Corswain and his men have ever counted themselves the victors, or ever believed themselves the superior army. For there is no stopping this. The Death Guard comes, in a form and manner so changed, in mien so unlike before, it is as though their paths have never crossed, and the angels of Caliban are no more than children, dressed for play with paper armor and wooden swords, surprised by real bandits or set upon by winter-hungry wolves. Lines break, shields shatter, defenses topple, incandant clouds of sparks, fighting platforms burn and collapse. This is not the Death Guard they have known and met and matched on other fields. This is some fevered derangement, some altered version, plucked from the secret nightmares of Caliban. The old foe, but not the foe. Some new thing wearing an old name. Some horror. Corswain believed he had begun to understand the chaogenic touch of the warp and steel himself against the diseased state of the Death Guard. But the narrow mountain pass has become a black pit, the stink a scalding gag of carious meat and liquid fever, the air a blizzard of blowflies, white ash and black snow. The Death Guard host bursts across their battlements and fortified slopes like a pestilential wave, drowning everything beneath its surge. Swarms of man-things in swollen, bloated armor ascend the gloomy cliff faces with insectile determination. They clamber and grimp up sheer rock that no human or demi-human should be able to scale, and pour out across the upper platforms, slaughtering and hacking. Dark angels, who have withstood the most ferocious Xenos forces, are cut down and torn apart in moments. Bodies pile and begin to rot from the very instant of death. Flies are everywhere, everywhere, billowing from visors and screaming mouths, spewing like smoke from the fluted horns and finials of Death Guard plate, soaring the air with their deafening roar of Azif. Comms fail, stripped of all meaning beyond the static scritch of wing cases. The light has failed too, filtered to an achromatic nothing by the fly clouds and the airborne chitin dust. Blood is almost white where it splashes rock and armor, and black where it spatters snow. Corswain fights. With him, on the ravine ledge, Tragen of the Ninth Order, Vorlois, Bructas, and others close enough to touch at arm's length, yet masked anonymous by the fly-blown murk. The mechanisms of their bolters have jammed, clogged with insect filth and crushed fly bodies. So they fight with blades, damascened longswords, and heirloom hand and halves smeared with a gurry of black caustic pus. Corswain rends dark armor and spills diseased entrails. He kicks the slain and dying foes from the rampart, casting them back into the faces of those clawing up behind them. He splits helms and breaks blades. Each blow sprays blood that adds to the slench dammed by the rampart lip. Men slip in blood, wade in it to their shins. It drizzles the air, a prisk of aerosolized gore that films their war gear and drips from their elbows and pauldrons. And in it all, he knows one thing. They are going to lose. Corswain knows this, in his heart, as sure and certain as any pledge he has ever made. It is not the enemy's fury, nor his uncounted numbers, nor the plague of his contagion. These are things they might have withstood, for they are 10,000 sons of Caliban. No, it is not that the Death Guard is going to triumph. It is that the Dark Angels are going to lose. For their courage has gone, their resolve. Somehow the very heart of them, that has always faced down enemies, no matter the odds, seems to have dissolved like ice in the sun. Their will has failed. He tells himself that it is the corrosive magic of the warp, that Typhus has infected them through the gifts of chaos with a distemper that has robbed them of their determination and sapped their vigor. He can see it in those around him, like Tragen. He can feel it in his own bones, an ache, a wasting despair, a futility. He tells himself that this is chaos at work, weakening the metal of the Dark Angels. But it is gnawing in his mind, too. The buzzing as if tells him this is his fault, his alone. This loss will be his. He has led them to this end. His 10,000 followed him for years from war to war, never doubting his leadership even as they faced the suicidal run to terror and the horrors of the Hollow Mountain. They followed him, without hesitation, even though they knew it would be to their deaths, for they believed in him, and believed their seneschal would make their life price count, achieving some victory on terror that would matter. But it will not. They have come like fools, it seems, to waste themselves on the shores of hell. They will accomplish nothing but death, squandered by a leader who thought he knew better. This is Corswain's folly. This is Corswain's defeat. They have loyally followed him because he was the voice of the lion, but his roar was an empty promise. He was too bold, too confident. He has not led them to glory, just to a humiliating and pointless doom at the hands of their archenemy. Corswain has failed their trust, and, their belief gone, they are failing him, spirit broken, fighting with lackluster anguish simply to prolong the bitter ending.
It's not true. It's not true,
Corswain tells himself, fighting bodies with his steel and the buzzing with his mind.
I have not wasted this effort, and I have not wasted these men. In the face of the fall of terror, in the face of the triumph of ruin, any attempt, however long the odds, was worth making. The lion himself would have done the same, and I would do it again. We had to try. This falter of faith, this withering of self-belief, it is just the miasma of the warp weakening us from within. If we can but find ourselves, if we can remember our spirit but for a moment.
He cannot even convince himself. His limbs are leaden. He will die on this cold mountainside, his body fattened with maggots, with 10,000 sons of Caliban dead around him. Whatever vainglorious notion of heroism brought him to the birth world, it is revealed as utter falsehood by the swarming, tenebrous majesty of the plague-bearing foe. But still he holds, by some thread. Still he holds at the rim of the pass, bodies piling around and under him, his sword's edge chipped and notched, swinging at the clumsy talipped beasts that claw over the lip of the cliff and shamble towards him through the fog of flies and cinders. He sees Tragen fall, carried over in the soup of blood by multiple attackers. He splashes to him, cleaving assailants off his brother, hauling bodies away and dispatching them with frenzied blows. Tragen is on his back, struggling to tear free and regain his feet. A mace clubs Corswain from behind. He reels, and then, like Tragen, is mobbed in a scrum of Death Guard. Hands seize him, pin him, threatening to rip his limbs from his body. He tries to fight. A Death Guard brute, larvae pouring from its mouth slot like rice, raises the mace to smash his head. The brute combusts. His bulk, wreathed in plasmic fire, collapses, molten metal fused to blistered meat. The mace drops into the mire. More beams sear out of the blizzarding insect clouds, engulfing others. Heads unform like hot wax. Corswain stumbles forward, released, his armor splattered with droplets of molten Death Guard plate. A figure steadies him.
"Stand firm, Your Grace," it says.
Plastered in mud, blood, and a crust of crushed insects, Corswain looks up and sees hope in the most unexpected form. A sign, a silver mask.
"Stand firm," great Seneschal," says Lord Cypher.